Oh, you know that feels good. A huge win for Kirby Smart and the Dogs, bringing home that national championship for the first time since 1980. What is going on, everybody? Welcome on into First Take. We got a crew here today. Keyshawn Johnson, Sam Acho. I'm Charlie Arnold. We got Jeff Saturday joining us in just a few minutes to talk NFL Super Wild Card Weekend. But guys, last night, wow, you know what? I think it's also appropriate. Let's give a shout out. James Dunn, one of our producers, went to Georgia. He has been waiting for this moment. Also, my First Take, Her Take co-host, Elle Duncan. I know for a fact that she is jumping for joy. I don't know who jumped higher last night. Was it Elle Duncan or Kirby Smart? You guys saw that jumping on the sidelines, right?
Might have been Elle, though, to be honest with you. She's always repping the GA, so it could have been her.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, guys, well, let's get right into it. It was a rematch of the SEC Championship just weeks ago, but boy, did we see a much different game. A game that began as a field goal fest in the first half turned into a real opportunity for Georgia QB Stetson Bennett in the second, throwing two touchdowns, completing 17 of 26 passes for 224 yards. But the nail in the coffin for Alabama came in the form of a Bryce Young pick six with 54 seconds to go. Stetson Bennett, thankful the D, able to undo his costly turnover just seconds before that.
I mean, I just knew there was going to be no way we were going to let a turnover like that stop us from winning the national championship. There's no way. I wasn't going to let that happen. I wasn't going to be the reason we lost tonight.
You lost this game against Alabama in 2017. How much sweeter does that make this win?
Well, that one will be with me for a long time, but this one will be with me for much longer. I'm proud of the University of Georgia, the support we get there. A lot of credit to Alabama, Coach Saban. They had a lot of injuries. You know, they lost Jameson Williams in a tough situation, but our kids kept fighting and never doubted.
Can I say something?
Absolutely.
You know, these two guys that are sitting up here, they're not defined by one game. These guys played great for us all year. They're great competitors. They were great leaders on this team. I just want to thank them for that and let everybody know how proud I am of these two guys.
Okay, not only did Georgia look like a different team this time around, but so did Alabama, actually. They were without receivers Jameson Williams. He was out the entire second half. Also, John Mechie. So that being said, Keyshawn, was last night's win more about Georgia's quarterback, Bennett Stetson, or Bama's injuries?
I think it was more about Bama injuries. When you look at those injuries, Kirby Smart alluded to it. You just mentioned it. No Williams, no Mechie. On top of that, you go to the secondary side of things. You had Jackson in replacement for the starter there at the cornerback position. So when you lose some of your top players, it's very difficult to overcome that, especially at the quarterback position. Your top two wide receivers for Bryce Young did not finish the game. In fact, one of them didn't even start the game.
Yeah.
And now you lose your top dog in the game. So it's very difficult for you to start to get off to doing things. You start pressing like Bryce Young was doing. You start taking chances like Bryce Young was doing. It's a different football game. There's nothing taken away from Georgia and Stetson Bennett at all. He had a tremendous season. I cannot take anything away from him, but I have to also say, just like Kirby Smart said, they had a lot of injuries. The injuries are key when you play professional or collegiate sports. You've got to have the depth, and clearly Alabama ran out of the depth. That's one of the reasons they lost the football game.
Well, Key, I'm over here laughing because if anybody's got depth, it's Alabama and it's Nick Saban. You heard when the season started, NIL, he's talking about, man, my quarterback's getting paid. We have guys who come here. Jameson Williams transferred from Ohio State, the Ohio State, to come and play. So if anybody's got depth and knows how to develop players, it's Nick Saban and Alabama, number one. Number two, what I heard sounded a little bit like, better yet, a lot like excuses, right? Well, this guy got hurt and that guy got hurt, and that's the reason why Alabama lost. When in all reality, we've seen injuries happen before, and we've seen Alabama overcome certain injuries. We saw Alabama overcome an injury to John Mechie in the SEC championship game, and that's when Jameson Williams stepped up. We saw Alabama overcome an injury in the Iron Bowl when Jameson Williams, not an injury, but a player being out. Jameson Williams got called for targeting. Now all of a sudden he was out for the second half of that game. We've seen people step up in the Alabama uniform. And so for me to come and say that the reason that Alabama lost, or better yet, the reason that Georgia won was because of Alabama's injuries, I'm not buying that. What I'm buying is that the reason that Alabama lost that game, better yet, the reason that Georgia won that game wasn't because of injuries, wasn't because of guys who weren't there on the defensive backfield at corner or at receiver. I think the reason that Georgia won this game was because of Stetson Bennett, the same Stetson Bennett who all over Twitter, people were calling for him to be benched. Not just this game, people have been calling calling for him to be benched anytime one of Georgia's games got close. Right? Anytime the game was close, any little mistake that they saw, people were calling for this guy to be benched for the five-star recruit, for the 6'6 quarterback, for JT Daniels. Yet week in and week out, the guy who started the season third on the depth chart in Stetson Bennett came in and proved everybody wrong. And he did it in the biggest moment. So for me, this Georgia team that found a way to win their first championship in 41 years, first time that Kirby Smart's beating Nick Saban in his last four tries, even though they've been up every single time in the second, third, or sometimes even fourth quarter. For me, this win is all about Stetson Bennett. Why? Because in the SEC championship game, we saw Stetson Bennett struggle, yet in this game, we saw Stetson Bennett shine.
Well, but Stetson Bennett was remarkable, but so was Georgia's defense. I mean, no look question. At them compared to the SEC championship game. No they question. Weren't able to hit Bryce Young even once. This game, they were able to hit him 10 times, hurried him on, I think, about 26 passes, and really were able to improvise, adapt, and they played all four quarters. So you got to give some props to the D as well.
But here, look at this. Sam and Charlie. Okay, Sam, you're saying that they overcome injuries. They have the depth. Yes, historically, they had depth. But even that depth that they have, when you have lack of experience and you get thrusted into a lineup, you then cannot play at the same level that Michi played at, the same level that Jamison Williams played at. You're missing something. Jackson, who did they target when you talk about Stetson Bennett? They went after the corner Jackson. They targeted the weakness of the team. So if that is your strength, they certainly wouldn't have done that. When you talk about the SEC championship game, you mentioned that all of a sudden Jamison Williams had to step up. Mm-hmm. He was missing in the national championship game. He wasn't there for Bryce Young to rely on. So therefore, Bryce Young felt as though he needed to take all of the pressure and put it on his back to force throws, to try to do things. And on top of that, you got to catch the damn ball when it's thrown to you. So those individuals that was put in position to make those plays, they were not catching balls. They were butterfingering them, trying to figure out how to move their hands a certain way to catch the football. I take nothing away from Georgia. I think Georgia deserved the national championship. But much like Charlie said, the defensive front was reckless. They were getting after him. He started to panic at times to get the football out because he didn't feel comfortable in that situation. Had nothing to do with Bennett. Zero. He gets credit. Yes, it's not the 6'5", 215-pound quarterback. There's no question about it. He gets all the credit in the world. Like I said at the start, from beginning to end since taking over, he's done a tremendous job. But let's not just turn this into it is the reason they won is because of Stetson Bennett. Let's not do that.
Sam, you're killing me.
Key, I love you. I love you so much. Let me tell you why I love you, because you're talking about pressure. You talk about, man, well, Bryce Young, he's got all this pressure, and his receivers are down and facing all this pressure. This is the Heisman Trophy winner.
Does it matter,
Bryce Young.
Though?
This is the dude who
if
set records
week in and week guys, out. If I don't have my guys, it doesn't matter.
This dude has felt pressure. You saw the Iron Bowl, Key. You saw the Iron Bowl. He got sacked 8 times in the Iron Bowl. That was more sacks than he's been sacked
guys.
All season. Yet in the last minute, no, he didn't. He only had one guy. He had John Mechie. In the last minute, the last 59 seconds of that game, we saw Bryce Young overcome pressure. Don't come at me with, well, it was too much pressure for Bryce Young, number one. Number two, you talked about receivers. You said, man, those receivers dropped passes. And yes, passes were dropped by the Alabama receivers because there were some backups in there. But let's not forget, there were some backup receivers for Georgia as well. George Pickens, he only showed up for the very beginning of that game. You saw that big catch that he had. But A.D. Mitchell, the dude you talked about who caught that pass, the touchdown on a backup, he also was a backup. He started the season as a backup. He was not supposed to be the guy. Georgia had a ton of injuries at receiver as well. And so both teams were playing through injuries with injuries. Both teams were playing with backups. And so let's not sit here and pretend that Georgia was just completely healthy and they had everybody and all these things and they just beat a depleted team and just act like Georgia, A.D. Mitchell
Sam,
is just this superhero. He stepped
I didn't
up
start the
big,
show
number
off.
One. And number two, Sam, yes, Sam, the defensive Sam, backs were injured.
Sam, I didn't start off saying that they had injuries. Their head coach, Kirby Smart, started off saying they had injuries. So maybe he's giving an excuse to his old boss. I don't know. All I'm doing is stating the facts, man. That's all I'm doing. Yes, Mitchell may have been a backup, but in that particular moment, their backup was better than Alabama's backup. Let's be honest.
Absolutely. And we could absolutely be honest in that scenario. But you're also saying that the reason – The question was, okay, what was the reason, right? The main cause, the important reason as to why Alabama lost, or better yet, Georgia won. And you said,
yes,
you said that the reason that Georgia won this game was because of Alabama's injuries. That's what you said.
I believe if Alabama was at full strength, I believe if Alabama was at full strength.
But isn't that the sign of a...
It would have been a different game. We saw the injury of Jamison, right? If he didn't get injured right there on a big chunk play, you don't think they would have went down there and put 7 on the board?
Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. But in all reality, Key, Alabama has been at full strength health. Well, no, hear me out, because you're laughing, you're smiling, which is all good and all dandy. It's a new year. It's 2022. So,
yes, it is.
In all reality, Alabama has been healthy all season long. Throughout the regular season, Alabama was healthy. But, man, you look at the matchups, like opponents. You look at the way that both these teams were playing, both at full strength. Georgia was dominating, and to put the words of Nick Saban, Georgia was the most consistent team. Mm-hmm. That's what Nick Saban said. We want to talk about what coaches said. Nick Saban said Georgia was the most consistent team all season long. Anyone like you who watched college football knows that. Alabama had its ups and its downs at full strength. So we cannot assume that if everyone were going to be healthy in this game, that Alabama would have just rolled up its sleeves and won this game. I believe there was a lot of pent-up anger and aggression. Like, if you want to do anything, Key, give credit to Kirby Smart. Give credit to this Georgia team. Give credit to the last 37 days where they got embarrassed in the SEC championship game, mm-hmm. and they were out of condition. They said, we're going to run extra. We're going to wake up early. We're going to do all these things to find a way to win. If you're going to give anybody credit, and you don't want to give it to Stetson Bennett, give it to the Georgia football team, and then give it to Kirby Smart, who has been saying all season that you are either elite or you are not. Sometimes the chips fall where they may. In this scenario, the chips fell with an injury to Jamison Williams, and I hope he gets healthy soon because he is a baller, a beast, one of the best receivers in college football. That's where the chips fell. But let's not just sit here and assume that, well, because all these guys were injured, right? Cameron Latu, tight end, he stepped up big, even through injuries. And so I know that it sounds good to say that Alabama would have won if they were at full strength, but Vegas, who had Alabama's underdog, Will Anderson, who should have been in the Heisman conversation, their star defensive player, who kind of said we were an underdog, that whole team was like, man, we need to play our best ball, and they didn't play their best ball, whether because of injury or because of they were not ready for the moment, and Georgia for all season was prepping for it, and they found a way to get the job done.
Well, if I don't have my two top wide receivers in the national championship game, versus the SEC where Alabama ran shop on Georgia, it's going to be a different game. It's just going to be a different game.
But also, let's just give some props to Stetson Bennett, you guys.
Nick Saban has 7 rings,
yeah,
bro.
Okay, so we got to move on, but let's quickly give some props to Stetson Bennett, okay? He's a walk-on quarterback. He also was getting so much criticism leading up to this game. Everyone asking the question, does he have what it takes to win a national championship? Yes, my friends, he absolutely does. Okay, Sam, we're saying goodbye to you for just a little bit, but you'll be back because we have to move on to kind of the bad news of yesterday, depending who you ask. As expected, yesterday was met with a lot of coaching turnover following the season's end. But what wasn't expected was Miami head coach Brian Flores losing his job. He's only the 4th coach in Dolphins history to record 2 winning seasons in his first 3 years with the team. Meanwhile, Joe Judge, who just closed out a 4-13 season with the Giants, still has his job despite leaving everyone baffled Sunday after calling for a quarterback sneak at 3rd-and-9 when the Giants were trailing 3-0. Giants general manager Dave Gettleman, he did announce his retirement yesterday. And now we welcome in Jeff Saturday. So, Jeff, are you more surprised Brian Flores was fired or that Joe Judge still hasn't been?
That Joe Judge hasn't been. And make no mistake, I think that Brian Flores firing is ridiculous. He had no business being fired. But when I watched that debacle that they called a Giants football game on Sunday and that 3rd-and-9 call where they go into a basically reverse bone and run that thing up there, I mean, compare and contrast that to the Detroit Lions, right? Think about the Fighting Dan Campbell. They run like a reverse pass, a double pass for touchdowns. They're leaving it all out on the field because it really doesn't matter. matter. And it didn't matter for the Giants either. And they're not trying to aggressively attack the defense and make plays. I don't care if it's Fromm. I don't care if it's Glenn. I don't care if it was Daniel Jones. Like, this is the last time you're going to play as a group. To play conservative football does not make any sense to me at all. And if you think about where the Giants sit today and that Joe Judge is having meetings, whether he's going to meet with the general managers or not meet with the general managers, what has happened this season to give you faith that this team has turned around, right? They had six games of double-digit losses. When you think about Barkley's not any better, Daniel Jones isn't any better, their offensive line isn't any better. I don't see any direction where this team, other than in press conferences, you feel like they are making steps to move on or to have that winning mentality. It just doesn't look good. And when you talk about trying to bring free agents, when you talk about trying to bring a general manager to this, if he's the coach that you're kind of saddled with, I'm not sure you're going to get the best candidate. So I just question where they are. I understand they don't want to upset the apple cart. And we've already had to let go of a coach after 2 years and blah, blah, blah. But Key knows, and I know, when you're in the locker room, you got to have the trust of those 53 guys who are lining up with you. And what the last 7 or 8 games have shown me is there's not a lot of trust in that locker room. There's not a lot of belief that we're turning the corner and we're right on the cusp of it. And again, I compared it to the Detroit Lions and just the style of play between those two teams. Which team do you think you'd rather go to if you're a free agent comparing those? And I think the decision is easy when you look at it that way. That's not just an indictment on Joe Judge, but the entire organization over these past few years. It just hasn't worked.
Look, Jeff, I understand what you're saying about Joe Judge, right? But I think when you talk about surprised, like, Joe Judge still has a job for now. So I'm okay. I understand. You know how these things go. They get rid of the general manager on a soft landing. Now they want to see what's out there, have some conversations. But when you go down to Miami and you all of a sudden yesterday – get hit with a rock that Brian Flores is gone after 3 years, turning things around. He took over for Adam Gase. Do I need to say it again? Adam Gase. He took over for him. So it was a complete turnaround, 160-degree turnaround. Then you think about it from this aspect of it. Ryan Fitzpatrick was there. When he got the job, they went out to hire Jim Caldwell as his offensive coordinator. Jim Caldwell abruptly got sick, had to step down because of health issues. He now wants to get back into coaching. So then they go out and they hire Shan Gailey to be their offensive coordinator. He then convinces Chris Greer, the general manager, to take a shot on Tua as the quarterback. They draft him. They say, great. So now they start off slow. I think they lost about their first 5 games in a row. Now all of a sudden, they get better and better and better. The next year, they win 10 games. This year, they got better and better and better. As soon as I saw it, I knew it was a political move anyway. Chris Greer, they're doing this to each other. Everybody's pointing a finger. Mm-hmm. There's reports out there that Brian Flores was really kicking the tires and pushing the Deshaun Watson trade. I would, too, if it all checked out correctly. I know who my quarterback is. He can't take me to the promised land. He may be able to win me 1 or 2 games, but he's going to eventually get me fired. So when I look at it, I said to myself, essentially, you fired a coach that was a winning football coach that had turned the program completely around from Adam Gase because your general manager and your owner couldn't get on the same page with the head coach in terms of philosophy, mm-hmm. personnel, and what they were doing on the coaching staff. Now you allow not only another man to be out on the streets that happened to be an African-American. We only have 2, mind you, in the pro football coaching, and that would be Mike Tomlin and Coach Culley at Houston, which they're now looking at and trying to figure out what they want to do with him in the Houston, Texas. It's just crazy to me. One of the biggest surprises of all this year for me in professional sports when it comes to hiring and firing coaches. Makes 0 sense. None at all. And wherever he lands at next, he's gonna land a pretty good job.
He's said to be one of the prime coaching candidates for a lot of positions that have opened up, so that's good news for him.
Yeah, Charlie, I was about to say, listen, he ain't going to be unemployed long. I mean, this is a guy that has proven what he can do. And to Key's point, I just want to add this on. Think about the distraction that he had to deal with Fitzpatrick and Tua first, and then Tua and Deshaun Watson or someone else coming into Miami. The way that he kept that locker room unified and battling. Bad offensive line. You know, you had Tua who you were trying to develop and bring along. He got that defense right. And this is the craziest part to me about Flores. I think he was 4-2 against the Patriots. When you hire a head coach, you hire him to first win your division because that's how you get a home playoff game. And so if you see a guy who has made strides in that direction and trying to work his organization back into the playoffs and getting it that way, I'm with you. He will not be unemployed long. And I can tell you that. My surprise, though, the reason I said it was a bigger surprise, I didn't think Joe Judge would make it through Monday after what happened on Sunday. So both are surprises to me. The Judge one's just a little more. But Brian Flores, that dude should be the top candidate for all the teams looking for coaches because of what he can do to come in to fix your organization.
Yeah, and Brian Flores did lead his team to win 8 of their last 9 games. So definitely in a good spot as far as his next job is concerned. Okay, guys, let's keep it moving because 44 years old, showing no signs of slowing down. I'm talking about Mr. Tom Brady.
Oh, I thought you meant me.
Yeah, you too. No, you're definitely not slowing down. But Tom Brady, did you do this recently? He put together a 3-touchdown performance in the 41-17 win in the season finale over the Panthers. The crowd reacted by shouting MVP at the 7-time Super Bowl champ. And Bruce Arians, he's on board with that one.
I think if he doesn't get it, it's a travesty. I mean, most completions ever. 5,000 yards, touchdowns, the whole 9 yards. I mean, to me, it's not even a close race.
A travesty. That is a strong word. Now, Aaron Rodgers kept his lead in the MVP odds over Brady in Week 18, throwing 2 more touchdowns in just 18 attempts against the Lions, finishing 6 short of Brady on the season. So, Keyshawn, all that being said, do you agree with Arians? It would be a travesty if Brady doesn't win MVP.
I mean, I get it. That's his guy and everything. I don't know that it would be a travesty at all. I think they both deserve it, but I think Aaron Rodgers, and hear me out here, I think Aaron Rodgers deserves it a little bit more. And I don't want to call it adversity because it's self-inflicting, everything that went on in the offseason, everything that went on during the season, the whole COVID mess, the misleading. He did that to himself. But what I want to say is when you do things like that and you put this pound of pressure on your back, Charlie and Jeff, you now have to overcome that. Okay, you start off in a slow season against the New Orleans Saints, but since then, all you've been doing is hitting pay dirt on fire, constantly carrying your football team because the MVP means most valuable player. And that is exactly what he's been to the Green Bay Packers. Now, that's not to say that if Tom Brady had to miss some time that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers wouldn't fall flat on their face. But I think most people would say if the Bucs are completely healthy and if Tom Brady missed some time, they may be able to figure it out from a defensive standpoint, running the football, having a Mike Evans there, a Gronkowski, when Chris Godwin was healthy, when AB was sane, all of those sort of things made the Buccaneers a much better football team. Aaron Rodgers, if he was off the Green Bay Packers, man, we're not even having a conversation right now about Green Bay.
Yeah, as we saw on Sunday.
We're probably talking about the damn Chicago Bears winning the game. I mean, winning the division or something. Just being honest.
All right, Key. Like, yes. I love you, man.
Yes.
You're wrong on this one in a big way. I'm not saying travesty. I'm not saying travesty either because Aaron Rodgers had a lights out year. I'm not taking it away. But if you look at them statistically, they have about the same QBR. They have about the same efficiency rate.
Yes.
Tom Brady has thrown 174 more passes than Aaron Rodgers. He has 1,200 more yards. He has the most touchdowns. By the way, he has the number 2 ranked offense. Green Bay has the 10th. Green Bay has a better run game than Tampa has all season. Green Bay had a better defense this season statistically than Tampa Bay did as well. So the responsibility placed on Tom Brady is more than what was placed on Aaron Rodgers to have to win. He don't have Dylan. He don't have Jones. Fournette's been banged up. Half his receivers are in and out of the lineup all the time. He continues to find ways to win. Gronk was out for a while. Like, think about all the things. You talk about adversity and what he's had to go through. This is the constant. Tom Brady continues to show up week in and week out and produce and perform. And again, his team is, it requires more of him than what the Green Bay Packers require of Aaron Rodgers. Again, both
are
fantastic quarterbacks.
I mean, can you just saw the numbers? How do you argue with those?
Are you serious, Jeff? You mentioned touchdown interception rate. You act like 37 touchdowns and 43 is that far off. One dude throw four interceptions, dude throws 12. I mean, like, because
He played the Saints one time. Brady played them twice, and both of the Saints ate both them dudes up. So we can go ahead and throw some interceptions to really good defenses.
That's more about the Saints defense. That's not about the quarterbacks. That's just the Saints defense is really good.
But they took it from both those quarterbacks.
Yeah,
they ate both those quarterbacks up.
So are you telling me a healthy Tampa Bay Buccaneers team minus Tom Brady wouldn't be able to kind of float along?
They haven't been
healthy. A healthy Green Bay without Aaron Rodgers.
They have not been healthy. Mm-hmm. It's what has happened this season and what has been asked of Tom Brady
asked of Aaron Rodgers. You're acting like Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers have been fully healthy, too. They haven't. You know, their secondary was depleted, okay? Their secondary depleted.
They
were missing Randall Cobb for a minute there. I'm just saying.
So you don't think 1,200 yards and the second-ranked offense says anything about
Brady has played slightly better
than Aaron Rodgers?
I can't look at the total numbers on statistics and pick an MVP based on that because the situations is such that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is playing from behind a lot of the times and Brady is throwing the football. It's not saying that they both don't deserve it. But he's pushing the ball down the field where
– That's my point.
If it wasn't for Brady, they wouldn't be winning these games.
No, Charlie, that's not true. I think they would win some games if Brady wasn't in there. Not all of them, but some because
– How?
They still could have ran the football when they had Jones and they had Fournette. Okay, they still have a solid defense. The back end of the defense
is
not great.
Dylan and Jones from Green Bay would be better than what Tampa Tom has.
I don't know about that. Because if you go back and look 100%. At the Indian. Who won the Indianapolis Colts game for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Listen, you're talking about one game. I'm talking about the season. You're talking yourself into Tom being the MVP.
No, I'm not. Because Leonard Fournette was the guy who carried them against Indy. My whole point is we can pick and point to other games.
Was that the one game when Tom Brady had his thumb injury, though? Is that his words? Wasn't that when his thumb was injured?
No. Say again?
He remember at one point in the season his thumb was injured and he ran the ball more than usual because his throwing thumb was not up to par.
Listen,
I'm giving the MVP to Aaron Rodgers. I don't care what Jeff says.
That's the end of the argument.
You talked yourself into Tom Brady being it.
You know what? Tom Brady certainly was the glue holding Tampa Bay together. But, guys, real quickly, I want to know who do you see advancing further in the playoffs? Do you think it'll be the Packers or do you think it'll be Tampa Bay?
I think it's going to be Green Bay.
Tampa Bay has the bye, of course. We have to take that into consideration.
Green Bay has the bye. Take that in consideration.
I mean, Green Bay, I'm sorry.
I just look at it's different than a year ago when Tampa Bay went to Green Bay and won, right? There wasn't a whole lot of fans. This time it'll be completely packed. It's just a different situation.
Yeah.
I don't think Matt LaFleur will take the football out of Aaron Rodgers' hands in the end. And it feels like an easier path for Green Bay. Just feels like an easier path.
Yeah, I agree with the path. I think it's Tampa Bay, though, for me. I picked them early in the season. The only caveat I will say is Fournette has to be back. They got to get JPP back. Some of the guys that are injured for the Buccaneers that may not even play this weekend against their first playoff opponent, they may have to have these guys to be able to really push. I still trust Tom Brady in these big moments, in these big games, but, man, without Godwin and now AB, you know, somebody's got to step up. Is it going to be Scotty Miller? Is it Evans? But Fournette is going to be the catalyst. Listen, this guy has averaged over 100 yards rushing per playoff game and a touchdown. That type of productivity's got to be back on the field for them to have any shot. But I think Tampa Bay still the one if they get healthy.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Who has the better chance to get to the Super Bowl, the Colts or the Cowboys?
Indianapolis Colts.
Woo!
You heard it. Swagoo, you heard it. It is clear. Let me tell you, ain't nobody, when the Colts get in this weekend, ain't nobody in the AFC want to match up with them. You think about, everybody talks about Dax in a slump. We ain't worried about our quarterback being a slump. We're going to hand that ball off to Jonathan Taylor, and we're going to pound you and continue to pound you and continue to pound you. And then on the defensive side, we're going to shut you down, and then we're going to take the ball away from you.
Oh,
Jeff.
Oh. Damn,
why?
Jeff.
Why?
Man, you must feel real bad there, ex-coat.
Jeff, it was all bad.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I sit there and I listen to myself and the passion that I spoke with, and I wholeheartedly believe that. I wholeheartedly believed everything I was saying. When I was getting up there, I was preaching. I felt it. I felt the spirit like I was in, man. And when that game kicked off, I wanted to rip my TV off the wall. I wanted to throw that thing. My wife had to say, hey, this is not the example we can set for our kid. I'm going to rip it down, smash it, take a picture of it and tweet it, do something. I want to bust this camera, really. That's how upset I am about the way this thing finished out. I have never seen a team with a two-touchdown, predicted victory, just melt the way they did. And so, listen, I said it. We ain't got to worry about our quarterback. We're going to hand it off to JT. Well, we did not. I think he had 15 touches or something.
He had 77 yards.
I mean, like, our offensive line played bad, gave up sacks. Our defensive line got pushed around. We didn't get any pressure. I never saw that coming. Carson Wentz, maybe he throws a late interception, we don't win. But, man, to get physically housed the way we did, really from the kickoff on, from the first drive on, we just let them, we ushered them in and then played terrible. It's literally one of the most painful things I've had to watch as a non-participant for a team that I cheer for. It broke me. I'm just being real.
Yeah, and Jeff, this hits very close to home, but all that being said, looking at this game, would you say that this was the biggest disappointment of the entire NFL season?
Absolutely. Yeah. This team had 2 weeks against the Raiders and against the Jags to get into the playoffs. They were injured, so the first part of the season really was irrelevant for me. They were so banged up. They had COVID issues. They had all kinds of issues going on. They couldn't get their team. Once they got to rolling, I thought, absolutely, this team's going to get in. Very similar to the 49ers. They're going to be a team to be reckoned with. When you have the number one pick in the draft is who the Jaguars are selecting. When you're playing that team to get into the playoffs and you don't get into the playoffs, absolutely, this is the most disappointing. Like, there's no other way. You had two chances to beat two teams that you should have beaten, and your quarterback doesn't play well. And this is why you sign that quarterback, right? Yeah. For games like this, when if you can't get it done, there's some awe-inspiring play to do something to get you out of it. We answered no call the last 2 weeks. Played flat, got beat. Most disappointing for sure.
It's your fault, Jeff. You should have been like Michael Irvin down on the sidelines hanging out with the Cowboys like he do, hanging out with the Colts, patting them on the back and firing them up. Take a page out the playmaker book next year.
Yeah, Jeff, come on, get on it, please. We need you. We can't have this happen again. Hey, so my next question, Jeff, because you mentioned that the whole reason that they brought on Carson Wentz was to win big games like this, and he couldn't get the job done. He played horrible. So, Jeff, should the Colts now move on from Carson Wentz?
Yeah, I think they do. And again, I don't know the cap implications quite yet. You know, I know that's still got to be worked out. I don't know the exact numbers. But for what you brought him in for, I mean, you think about the Tennessee Titans loss, the moments that were in the grasp of the team to win, and that he doesn't make enough plays. I understand he had a great throw late in the Arizona game when we were down all the offensive line, but consistently throughout the season, when the moments mattered most, he really didn't step up and do things that you would expect that type of quarterback with that type of investment to make. And look, this is not just an indictment on Carson Wentz, because again, the Jacksonville game is not just on him. That whole team got beat up. But when you ask an organization to take on a player like Carson Wentz, there has to be huge upside. And it's like, he didn't throw an interception on the road, I think, until Jacksonville. And then he throws to, I mean, it's just like those type of conversations, when the moments matter most, that cannot be the position that you're concerned about. You have to have, hey, we're going to ride through this. He might not be the greatest, kind of the Jimmy G mentality. He might not be the greatest, but when that drive, that signature drive has to be had, when the Rams and the 49ers just played, Garoppolo steps up and makes that drive. That's what you have to have for Wentz. He doesn't have to carry you all season, but man, you got to have him in certain moments, put the team on his back, and carry that. He did not do it really in any season or any point of games this season, in my opinion. So I think if you're the Colts, you're looking for the next person to do that.
Jeff, do me a favor, though, really, in all honesty. Take your heart out of it. You play center. Take the fan part of it. You're smart. They're not moving on from Carson Wentz because there's nobody you can replace him with. You cannot move on from a guy who just got there that you put all your eggs – and all the eggs in that basket, saying to yourself, he can get us there. Yeah, he had some up and down moments this year, but let's face it, this is his first year, and I know you say, what's the same system they ran in Philly? It's really not the same system. There are pieces of the system. He's still getting used to the wide receivers, the offensive line calls. He's still trying to get used to everything that goes on. I would say after this season, you evaluate him, you self-evaluate him in the offseason, you sit him down, you go over all the things that you need to go over, and going into next season, he's your guy. Maybe you draft a guy, maybe you find a veteran that you put behind him just in case the seas start to get a little rough over the course of the 2022 season. Then you make that decision, but you don't abruptly make a decision based on a loss to Jacksonville and one to the Raiders when you had playoff implications, when you gave up so much to go get a guy that you believed in at the start of the season. You're smart enough to know that, Jeff. You know better than that. And I understand your heart, Indianapolis Colts, and you feel a certain way.
You know it.
Right now, you have to remove yourself from that and look at it objectively. They're not going to move on from him at least this year.
I never played for the Colts, and I still tend to agree with Jeff here, Key.
No, you may agree with them, but you also got to realize, what are they going to get? What are you going to get that's better than that you honestly can get?
So here's my question to you, Key. If you could go get a Cousins, I'm not even using the Aaron Rodgers because we know, like, but I'm just saying, if you could go get a Kirk Cousins type quarterback, do you think that would perform better in the Colts offense than what Carson Wentz just provided you?
I don't think so. I honestly don't think that you can go get a Kirk Cousins and then implement him into the offense and expect for him to carry you where you're trying to go after Carson Wentz had a solid season, one of his best seasons he's had in the NFL, and all of a sudden you're going to implement Kirk Cousins and learning a whole new system and all that over again. I don't think that'll work for you.
But this is my point to that. And you're – listen, and they may have to stay with him because of money and because of development, all those things. So, you know, Chris Ballard has to make that call, Jim Irsay and Frank, and I get that, right? But this is what I would say. You know, you look for ascension from a quarterback. Like, when in those moments did he really separate himself from just the average quarterback in our game? Because we gave up a first round and a third round to get him, so you're invested, right? I get that part. But my question is, in the last 2 weeks, when it matters most, and you and I both know next year's not going to be any different.
Uh-huh.
You're going to get down to where that guy has to make those plays. Was there anything that you saw from this season that makes you go, yeah, he's the guy that I want throwing that ball in the fourth quarter of that game down by 7? That's the part that I question. I question that there wasn't anything that I looked at and go, man, he really changed my opinion of how he played and that he elevated the team. I just didn't see the elevation. That's my only concern is you are pot committed, and now I don't want it to make a bad situation even worse. I think you really have to evaluate it.
They're definitely going to be evaluating. They do have a good amount of cap space, though, according to Spotrac.com, the 7th most in the NFL. Obviously, letting go of Carson Wentz frees up even more money. But also, when you look at it, the situation is just bad all around, because not only have the Colts digressed, but also the rest of the AFC and really even the AFC South has gone uphill this season. So all around, it's not looking very good for the Colts. But
not good.
You know what? This is depressing enough. So let's just leave it right there, guys, okay?
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
All right, talking about the Nets, Kyrie Irving had 22 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists in last night's loss to the Blazers. And afterwards, the opponent's coach, Chauncey Billups, says he believes Brooklyn Nets guard Kyrie is the most skilled player ever to play at his position. So, Keyshawn, quick take, do you agree?
I do agree. I think he is the most skilled player at his position. You know, you could always point to Allen Iverson, and you can look back at his career and some of the things that he's been able to do. But when you're thinking about a guy who took off several months in basketball and then decided to join his team and drop in 22 points and 9 of 21 from the field goal range, 8 boards and 4 assists, he's going to continue to just keep getting better over time. This is why I think he is the most skilled guy ever in the history of the NBA at that position.
Okay, now moving back to the NFL, the Patriots facing division foe Buffalo in the wild card this season. They've split their games 1-1. So, Jeff, are you confident rookie Mac Jones can lead the Patriots to victory in Buffalo?
No, I don't think he leads them to victory, Charlie, but I don't think it's going to be a Mac Jones issue. I think when you look at the way that the Bills are built and designed, I think Josh Allen ends up getting the victory. But I think Mac Jones can make enough plays to keep the game tight, and I think the way Belichick is going to scheme it, it's going to be good. But I think ultimately the Bills get the win just because of the totality of their team.
Okay, yeah, we'll see what type of adjustments Bill Belichick can make. But, guys, we're going to leave it right there.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.